Docs Clubhouse with Eric Lindeberg, the Doctor of Baseball, only on blogtalkradio.com. The Doctor is in.
And thank you, everyone, for being here. This is Eric Lindeberg. You're in Doc's Clubhouse, and today I have a very special guest, Dan Schlossberg. Dan has written more than 38 baseball books, thousands and thousands of articles. He's a broadcaster, and so many things that most of us who are in the business pale in comparison. I've been a fan of this guy for 30 years. Dan Schlossberg, welcome.
Thanks very much, Eric. Great to be on your show.
Yeah, and you've written a lot of books, as I mentioned, over the years, including one that stuck with me in particular, The 300 Club. Have we seen the last of baseball's 300-game winners? How do you feel about that now? Do you still feel it's possible that we have seen the last?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is. I mean, when you're talking about rotations with five guys in it, and pitchers these days don't work more than six innings at a shot, no more complete games, that means less wins, very few 20-game winners, and, of course, less 300-game winners. You got to do the math, Eric, because to win 300 games, that's 15 years of 20 wins or 20 years of 15 wins. That's pretty tough.
Yeah, that is. You're right, and they don't have the longevity today. Let me ask you about something that ties into that, pitch counts. Very controversial issue today. We've talked about it on this show, but do you feel pitch counts are necessary? Do they hurt the pitchers? Do they help the pitchers? What's your thought?
Well, it's very funny you ask that question, because my book that I did last year, which was called When the Braves Rolled the Diamond, had a whole chapter on Leo Mazzoni, the famous pitching coach who was the guy behind those 14 consecutive division titles. He says that pitch counts are ridiculous, you can throw it out the window. However, baseball really, as a sport, everybody's talking about pitch counts. They have to be careful with young arms and all this stuff. But there's so many more Tommy John surgeries. Leo's theory was you throw more often and you get hurt less often. He had pitchers throw twice between starts, for example. And that was a rare theory. The only other pitching coach I know who subscribed to that was Johnny Sain.
Yeah, and both of them very successful. I tend to agree with you. I look back at pitchers like Marichal and Koufax and Gibson, Warren Spahn. They were pitching four-day rotations, sometimes throwing 200 pitches in a game, and they were right back and never got hurt.
And they pitch in relief in between starts, too.
That's right. That's right. Today, that only happens in a World Series for a starter to come out of the bullpen, and then it's a major, major news story when, in reality, guys have been doing that for 50 years.
Very true. And I talked to Don Sutton because I had, in that particular book, The 300 Club, I profiled all of the 24 300-game winners, including the 10 living ones. And Don Sutton is adamant about throwing out pitch counts. He said it's ridiculous. He was trained to finish what he started. He believed in going nine innings. And today's pitchers don't do that.
No, and they're not. I think it starts in Little League, even as far back as then. They're not allowed to throw enough pitches. And if you don't develop your arm over the years, you're not going to have the arm strength when you get to the major leagues.
Yeah, it's very true. And there's just very few pitchers with that stamina, with that kind of stamina. It's just a way to train now. And also, the amount of money that ball clubs spend on relief pitchers, closers especially.
Yeah.
When you look at what Mark Melanson got from San Francisco, it's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
80-something? Crazy money.
Yeah, and now Jansen got it, Chapman got it. That's insanity. But the other thing I wanted to talk to you about before we go to your new book is your show called Braves Banter. Is that still going strong?
Oh, it sure is. We're now in our sixth year, and it's all about the Braves. I'm a huge Braves fan, even though I live in New Jersey. And, in fact, my show is resuming on March 23rd on Blog Talk Radio and iTunes, and my guest is going to be the new Hall of Famer, John Charles.
Great, great guest. And congratulations to John. A lot of people should not have been surprised when he got elected. Speaking of the Hall of Fame, how did you feel about the last election, the guys that are just recently put in?
Well, I always feel that there's some guys that get in who shouldn't and some guys who don't get in who should. But this year, the guy who really deserved to get in more than anyone, I thought, was Vladimir Guerrero. He should have been a first ballot guy. Look at his stats. I mean, he wasn't the greatest outfielder. He made a lot of errors every year. But he had a cannon for an arm. He could run. He could hit for power and average. He was a great player. And I thought he should have been a first ballot guy. Also, from last year, Trevor Hoffman. How did he miss again? It's amazing.
I don't know. I argued for Trevor Hoffman vehemently because he belonged on there. And this year, I agree with you. Guerrero should have been a first ballot. Wow.
And then I was kind of surprised, to be honest, about Pedro Rodriguez. Great player, but tainted with that steroid brush. I mean, Jose Canseco in his book, and he was pretty honest about who he named, pretty accurate too.
Yes.
And Pudge was one of the guys. So, I don't know.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned...
Does this now open the door to Bonds and Clemens?
See, I wonder about that. I wonder about that because Pudge, I guess a lot of people who read Canseco's book knew about that, but his name wasn't constantly being brought up like the other guys. It's funny about Canseco's book. When it first came out, people were saying he was nuts and he was lying and this and that, and it turns out he was the most credible guy in the whole situation.
It is hard to believe, but that Texas team, there's so many guys involved in that team. John Rocker was there, Juan Gonzalez. I mean, so many guys from that team were involved. Palmeiro, of course.
Oh, that's
so
right.
He was right in the heart of the action there.
That's right. Okay, I want to switch gears here. You've written a new book, The Baseball Bible.
It's called The New Baseball Bible. It's got a long subtitle, which is List Legends, Notes, and Nuggets from the National Pastime. The title's almost as long as the book, Eric.
Okay. And is it available now?
It is. The official pub date is March 7th, but it's on Amazon.com. And just look up The New Baseball Bible. That's enough for people to remember. It's really, the derivation of this book goes back to 1980 when I did a book called The Baseball Catalog. That was a book of the month club alternate in 1980.
I remember that.
Yeah, this has been updated many, many times, actually, but not since 2002 when it was called The Baseball Almanac. Now it's called The New Baseball Bible. It's really the same book, but expanded all the way through the Cubs World Series victory.
Oh, fantastic. Okay, we're going to go to a station break, and when we come back, I want to talk to you more about this book, all right?
Sure.
All right, stay with us. We'll be right back.
Doc's Clubhouse, blogtalkradio.com.
Phoenix listeners and listeners visiting Phoenix, for the best sports bar experience in town, it's Brennan's Pub, 34th Street and Bell Road in Phoenix. The best sports bar, dining experience, and atmosphere you will find in the Valley. For great food, great scenery, all of your favorite sports teams on the big screen TVs. Happy hour Monday through Friday from 3 to 7 p.m. And Saturday, Sunday happy hour from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. Good food, good people, good times. That's Brennan's Pub.
Hi, this is Seth Swirsky, and you are in the clubhouse with the Doctor of Baseball, only on blogtalkradio.com.
Doc's Clubhouse with Eric Lindeberg, the Doctor of Baseball.
All right, thank you, listeners. We are back with Dan Schlossberg. Dan, we mentioned before the break your new book, The Baseball Bible, with the long subtitle. Let me ask you, what gave you the impetus to create this book right now?
I really wanted to take the baseball catalog, which came out in 1980 and had many updates since, and come out with a new version of it, because the last version was in 2002. That's a long time ago. A lot can happen in 15 years, and a lot has happened in 15 years. So I convinced my new publisher, which is Skyhorse Sports Publishing, is one of their imprints, and we did it. The last publisher had been Triumph Books. The original publisher was Jonathan David Publishers. So it's kind of like a free agent, you know, shopping himself around to the best offer.
Yes.
And this year came out with this book, coming out on March 7th officially, 424 pages. And the way I describe it, Eric, it's the Old Farmer's Almanac with a baseball motif.
Oh.
In other words, if you were doing the Old Farmer's Almanac and look at all those graphics in there, the unusual stuff they have, and put it with a baseball motif, that's what my idea was here. It's an offbeat illustrated history of baseball.
That's fantastic. It sounds great. And years ago, we all used to get the Baseball Encyclopedia and pore over that thing. And it's online now, I guess. You cannot buy the actual physical book. So the Baseball Bible, in a lot of ways, does this replace some of those older books that we had as references?
It really does. And the fun thing about it is because of all the illustrations and sidebars, you can leave this book in your bathroom and pick it up and read it backwards or in the middle and still enjoy it. There's something for everybody in this book. And there's a lot of information in this book not found in any other baseball book, like a chapter on women in baseball. There's a picture of the Lusitania because in 1913, a lot of big-time stars took a world tour and they returned to the United States on the Lusitania just before it got torpedoed. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff like that in this book.
Well, yeah, you're right. That's something, number one, I didn't know. I'd never heard, and most people haven't, and they wouldn't find it anywhere else, I believe. That is fantastic. What other kinds of things won't they find anywhere else?
There's an art artist named Ronnie Joyner, who's a very talented baseball artist. Anybody who reads Sports Collector's Digest will see his cartoons in every issue. He did some special cartoons for this book, and among those are Mariano Rivera, Chipper Jones, Derek Jeter, Bobby Cox. I mean, really, really good stuff. This guy is a very talented artist. And Ronnie actually did a book of his own a couple of years ago with all his cartoons. He's the kind of a guy who does a cartoon and he writes in the whole guy's career next to the artwork. It's really brilliant stuff. And I was very honored that he decided to be part of this book. But there are also a lot of pictures published in this book, never published elsewhere. Many of them are from my previous collection, my own collection.
Yes.
And, you know, pictures that I took, some of the pictures include me. There's a picture of me posed with Ron Bloomberg. Ron Bloomberg, the first DH in baseball history.
That's
totally
right.
Totally an accidental DH because he was batting sixth in the top of the first inning on April 6, 1973. The Yankees rallied, and therefore he got to bat in the top of the first. Orlando Cepeda, batting third for the Red Sox, thought he was going to be the first DH, but it turned out to be Ron Bloomberg. Ron made a whole career out of this and a book called Designated Hebrew that I was his co-author. And the reason that title came up was Dick Schaff once said to Bloomberg, "What was it like to be the first DH?" And Bloomberg said, "What do you mean? Designated Hebrew?" And Dick Schaff said, "That's a book."
That's fantastic.
And so it was.
How did you get interested in baseball way back in the beginning when you were a kid? How did you develop this passion for the game?
I think my story is very typical. I used to sit down in front of the TV with my dad and watch the games. He would turn off the sound and just talk to me, tell me what was going on, tell me who was who. He took me to my first game, which was 1958 at Yankee Stadium. I remember seeing the Washington Senators, who had been a really terrible team. And I just loved it ever since, and my interest just grew and grew and grew. And I became a Braves fan because that 1957 World Series, the first baseball I can remember watching, the Milwaukee Braves beat the Yankees in the World Series that year. All my friends rooted for the Yankees. The Dodgers and Giants were leading the West Coast. And I thought the Braves were the best team. So I've been with them ever since.
It's always good to go with the underdog. Look at the Cubs fans.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
As I said, your new book, The Baseball Bible, coming out. I'm looking forward to reading it. How can our listeners find it? You said it's on Amazon already. Will it be in bookstores soon?
It is on Amazon. It should be showing up in bookstores any minute now. It's actually called The New Baseball Bible. The Sporting News used to call itself The Bible of Baseball, and I assume that's where the title came from. I wanted to call it The Baseball Catalog again because of the original book and just to change the subtitle, but this is fine. It's The New Baseball Bible, and it really is called a Bible because everything about baseball is there. In fact, you might remember the old Woody Allen movie, Everything You Wanted to Know About Sex But Were Afraid to Ask?
Yes.
You could call this book Everything You Wanted to Know About Baseball But Were Afraid to Ask.
Ah, fantastic. That's probably how I will refer to it to my friends. Well, Dan, I want to thank you for... go ahead.
I hope so. I think that'll be great.
Yes.
There's stuff about umpires and rules and how to keep score. Everything is in this book.
So everything that somebody who isn't familiar with the game even would want to know is in this book.
Yeah, I call it a book of Americana, not just a book of baseball. It's Americana. It's really something I think everybody would enjoy. It doesn't matter how old you are or how young you are. But 424 pages and $18, that's a bargain.
That is a bargain, especially today. And a book about Americana, I like that, because baseball and America are so intertwined, they transcend each other, I always say. So, Dan, thank you for being with us today again, and we'll have you on again soon. I'm looking forward to reading your new book, as are all my listeners. So for Dan Schlossberg, this is Eric Lindenberg in Doc's Clubhouse. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for subscribing to Doc's Clubhouse. New shows every Friday, only on blogtalkradio.com.